The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Damian McLaughlin, Professor of Marketing at UCD Smurfit Business School, is with us for the week trending, as is Brianna Parkins, who is reporter with Ireland AM and Virgin Media Television. And before we get into women making COVID-19 decisions, let's have a different story entirely, Brianna, because I love the story of the guy who lost the cocaine on the train station in Cork, and who rang the Gardaí to report the loss of his bag. Tell us about this, please.
This poor bloke, he's having a rough one. So he was travelling down to Cork. He was a drug courier. Disaster strikes. He realises that his bag is missing, his bag containing 4,000 euro of cocaine. He gets into a bit of argument with security staff at Kent Station, asking to be let back on the train so we can have a look around. They don't let him back on. He calls Gardaí later to report that a bag has been missing. But he has a bit of luck. He remembers that he'd left it. He might have gone to a shop. Goes into the shop. The bag is there, but also are the guards. And that's when they search him and find that he's got a massive haul of cocaine in his bag. Now, the 20-year-old received a 4-year suspended sentence, so at least he won't be facing any jail time. The judge pointed out that it's one of the more unusual crimes he's ever seen. How's that for bad luck?
I wonder what was going through his mind, because I suspect there might have been a little bit of terror that he was facing, that the idea that if he had to report back to whoever actually had the drugs originally, that he'd lost them, that there could be terrible consequences. So maybe it was the lesser of two evils to hope that the Gardaí could help him get the bag back without actually looking to see what was in the bag.
I'd say you're correct there. He was banking on the guards not searching and not opening up the zipper. But I'd say that's exactly what the case is. He probably would have gotten the drugs on tick. He wouldn't have paid for them. He would have sold them or gotten payment at the end. And you don't want to be owing €4,000 to a drug gang.
40,000. It was quite a haul, wasn't it?
4,000, sorry, yeah.
Oh, it was a 4-day thing. So, Damian McLaughlin, what do you make of this guy's initiative?
I felt terribly sorry for him, Matt, exactly for, as Brianna said, I'm sure at a minimum there was a beating, and he owes that debt to whoever gave him the bag to carry. I sometimes think also in these situations we should give some kudos to the guard involved. I'm sure it was an unarmed guard, you know, in the beat or on a car who stopped by and had the common sense to open the bag and see what was in it, rather than just, you know, a young person who'd lost their sports gear or something. Sad for this young man, 20 years of age, 4 years in jail. Maybe it's a chance to straighten himself out. But kudos to the Gardaí involved
suspended.
As well.
But I do think as well, I mean, you do have to ask questions about him, that if you were carrying such a valuable haul, knowing as well that it was an illegal bag, how would you actually lose the bag? How would you ever allow yourself to leave it out of your sight?
Matt, I'm watching Love Hate for the first time at the moment. It's been rerun. I didn't watch it the first time around. It was too graphic, I felt. I'm watching it now. And I think it's a brilliant drama in the sense that it gives a real sense of the terror of the young people that are involved. I'm sure this guy was terrified. I don't know anything about him or where he comes from, but his address would suggest that he probably hasn't been to Harvard University. So not that smart to start out with. Maybe didn't finish school. Involved in the wrong kind of thing in life anyway, and absolutely terrified. And that's how I'd say I feel more than a little bit sorry for the person involved.
Okay, now, Brianna, you're obviously from Australia, and tell us about this new rampage of killer great white sharks, which is terrifying your native country.
Yeah, I mean, I did read that Daily Mail article that suggested that Australians are terrified of the water and, you know, will it ever be safe to go back in again? It's a bit of a beat up. Australians are definitely going back in the water, if there's anything to go by my old man, who seems to be out in the Speedos almost every day in the water. There has been a high number of fatal attacks. So we're seeing, we've seen 7 so far this year, and that's the highest number in about nearly 100 years. But it's not the highest number of attacks. So we've had 21 attacks this year, fatal and non-fatal, and normally we average around 20. Now, I know there's seven people have been killed by sharks this year, but for a population of 25 million, that's still incredibly low. You're still more likely to be killed by a cow or a horse. They are responsible for 77 deaths in 2018. The concerning thing, though, is that we're seeing attacks on really popular beaches like the Gold Coast. And the Gold Coast beach is protected by things like big shark nets, which basically does what it says on the tin, and these things called drum lines, which are sort of these shark bait and hook defensive measures. So somehow this shark got through that and killed a 46-year-old real estate agent. It's incredibly tragic, but there's also a huge debate around, you know, do we initiate big shark culls because of the ecological impacts? There's a thing called the tropic cascade. So basically, if you take out a predator at the top, it affects the food chain all along. It can affect things like fisheries and other natural resources that humans rely on. So it's definitely sparked a debate in Australia about how we handle sharks, but are we terrified of sharks? Probably not. They've been there since the dawn of time. We're used to them.
Do you think could sharks... Sorry, Damien, you wanted to come in there.
Yeah, I have a theory on this one, Matt, because I think this kind of story or something like this comes out from Australia every year at around Halloween time. And I think it's the Aussie sense of humour to remind us in the Northern Hemisphere that just as we're stepping into the winter, they're going into their wonderful summer. I don't have a lot of sympathy on this one. I mean, they're going to have their wonderful beaches and their wonderful climate, their great attitude to life, and we're going to be going through the most miserable winter we've probably had in 50 years.
No.
I don't know.
Do you think, Brianna?
You probably have to ask the family whose dad isn't coming home for Christmas because he's been taken by a shark. I don't think that's the case. You know, we do sort of report attacks during the warmer months. The sharks like to hang around warmer waters. There's been reports of how sharks move around, and apparently it's to do with rainfall and water temperature. So they go wherever the fish goes. So if there's a lot of fish being attracted because of certain temperature currents, that's where the sharks go. And unfortunately, that's where the humans go. The majority of people attack tend to be surfers, because when you're a shark looking up from the bottom, from underneath the water, surfers look like seals. They've got wetsuits on, and the shape of their boards and their limbs moving around makes them very seal-like. Sharks don't eat people. They just have a bite out of you because they think that you're a seal.
No, you're so knowledgeable about that. What's your knowledge of what goes on in the Atlantic waters at West Kerry? Do you think maybe could there be any sharks responsible for the disappearance of fungi?
Look, this is a sore point in my house at the minute. I live with a Kerry woman. I didn't think that the news that a missing dolphin that was missing for 2 days warranted the news headlines. I think I don't think you can call a dolphin missing after 2 days. He lives in the ocean. Just went
it's
to another
fungi.
Part of the ocean. Maybe he wanted a break. Do you know? You've been getting tourism off him for 30 plus years. Maybe he went to have a little smoke break. Maybe he went and had a dirty weekend. We don't know. Do you know?
But he hasn't come back. Fungi
have his peace.
It's not looking good, Matt. This is a cultural icon in Ireland. I'm not a fan. I never went down in the boat, as we talked about, I think, a couple of shows ago. I never went down in the boat. I never liked it. But fungi is a cultural icon with very significant economic benefits for Dingle. And in the marketing world, we use this phrase of mental availability. That is, when you think about something, that the first thing that comes to mind. And I think Dingle has largely built its reputation as a centre for a family holiday on the back of fungi over the last 30 years or so. Certainly why we went the first time was to see fungi.
And that's why there's calls for financial support coming from some of those who offered the trips out in the boats down in Kerry.
Yeah, well, you could see why they might need it, Matt. I suspect that there's so much financial support floating around right now for anybody in business that they'll be okay. And I certainly hope that they are. And of course, Dingle's still a wonderful place to go. People shouldn't forget that, even if you can't go and see fungi. But the opportunity to create a fungi memorial exhibition or to go and see fungi, it's a bit like, you can imagine Graceland for fungi. This is where fungi used to jump. And apparently also, there's a lot of other dolphins down there as well, Matt. So you can go and look at other dolphins, even if it's not your favourite fungi.
You know, they probably don't come in and do the fungi, although it does disprove this dreadful theory that there were multiple fungi working in rotation, that the cute Kerry fishermen had managed to substitute in different fungi over the years. Clearly, there was the one and only. Brianna Parkins, what did you make of the decision-making in relation to going to level 5 in this country earlier this week and the appearance that it was male-dominated?
Well, yeah, I think Fintan O'Toole really hit this on the head in the Irish Times, pointing out that the 11 people who were directly involved in that, those high-level talks around the decision to go to level 5, were all male. So you had the 3 coalition party leaders, 3 ministers, they were briefed by 4 men and 2 other men involved as well. It's interesting that the only female member of NEFET wasn't involved, Dr. Evan Connolly. And to me, it's it's very frustrating, because the thing is that the industry is keeping Ireland going at the moment, and the workers putting themselves at risk. Our retail workers, our nurses, our teachers, our creche workers are mostly women. They're female-dominated industries. They're mostly women. But a woman didn't have a seat at the table when this decision was made.
Now, when NFET went to the cabinet subcommittee, which, yes, was all made up of men, maybe it was the men from NFET who went, but there are 14 women, to the best of my knowledge, on NFET out of around 34 in total on the decision-making body. And then the cabinet as well, which had to approve what had been agreed by the cabinet subcommittee, also has a number of women present. Does that change your view in any way?
I understand this, and sorry, I was wrong about Dr. Evelyn Connolly, but from looking at it from the outset, those senior high-level positions were not populated by women. And I know that women would have had an advisory role through all of that, but they didn't have that kind of buck-stopping, final decision-making power. And there's a couple of factors in this. There's, of course, you know, women involved in politics, and there's issues around quotas as well. But from what I've seen reporting in other jurisdictions and other countries, that female politicians, I mean, we talk about the pink ghetto in the corporate world. So women kind of ending up in things like HR or PR, or not kind of reaching as high level executive positions. And that sort of happens to a degree in politics. You see women being put into sort of family, community, arts, education ministries, those portfolios, but you don't see them being put into ministries of finance. And I don't think Ireland has ever had a female minister of finance. And that's kind of the portfolio that's involved in those key decision makers. So it's disappointing that I don't think one woman was really involved in that high level, that sort of final negotiation.
But do you think might the decisions have been any different?
It's hard to say, because I'm not a public health expert, nor am I a politician. But, you know, we looked at this area, and there's this kind of this study done in India about female quotas. And they found that female politicians decided things very, very differently. They looked at more social costs, social benefits. So I can't say that for sure in an Irish context, but potentially. But you know what, for a decision that affects the half the population, not to have them represented in that last decision-making process is disappointing and frustrating. And I think emblematic of a wider problem of a lack of representation of women in Irish politics. Like, I think we're ranked number 92 at the minute in this monthly ranking of female participation in parliament. And currently we're being beaten by South Sudan and Afghanistan. That's a problem.
Damian McLaughlin, as Professor of Marketing at UCD Smurfit Business School, there is in business, isn't there, a much bigger emphasis placed now on having more women involved in the decision-making process. And even if it's happening slowly at board level and a senior management level, quotas have been put in place to try and ensure that you get a better diversity.
I think generally most leaders today, Matt, recognise the importance of inclusiveness, that it's not just about gender, but also different orientations, different geographic parts of the world, different religious groups, people who are able-bodied and perhaps have physical challenges in life also, because everybody brings a different experience. What I really liked about Fintan O'Toole's piece, and this is I think the second or third time he's written about this, is the focus on the quality of decision-making that he brings. And I think that's really what this article is about. There are a million points, as Brianna has said. You can go through the long list of reasons of how the patriarchy is still operating well in Ireland. That's not what this is about. This is about, could we make better quality of decisions with women at the table? And there's tons. I just checked the research this afternoon before we came on. When women go to this kind of setting, they tend to view it as an opportunity to explore and collaborate, while men want to make a final decision like these guys did. When women go to these kinds of situations, they want to meet the people who are impacted and who they'll work with, while men want to meet with other leaders. In different research, the impact of women in business decisions is that they tend to temper down the overconfidence that men have and lead to less aggressive risk-taking. And also, women are far more likely to say, I disagree with the prevailing view, and here is what I think. And I think there is evidence, research evidence on this, Matt, that particularly in crisis situations, that having women in the key decision-making group actually improves your performance for all of the reasons that I've just called out. So I think Fintan's piece is really, really important. this country is great, as he has said before, at responding to crises. But actually what we need is to have a better quality of decision-making about all issues. And that decision-making would be better if there was greater representation from women as a start, and not just from men.
A listener says, did you ever stop to ask if women want these high-level positions? Maybe they choose not to go for these positions because of the long hours, heavy workload and time spent at work away from their families. Well, or is it not PC to hold opinions like that, Damien?
It is entirely the responsibility of our society to make sure that any woman who wishes to do that can still take care of any other responsibilities that she has. And indeed, that applies to men also, Matt. Women conduct work for free on behalf of society, caring for children, caring for elderly parents. There's no recognition given to that whatsoever. And in order for us to have this better quality of society and better quality decision making, that has to be done away. There's nothing PC about it. There's nothing. There's no playing to the gallery on this. If you want to have a better quality of decision about how your society is operated, lots of women do want to be involved. The best students that I've been in academic for nearly 30 years, Matt, and the best students in those 30 years, and I mean in terms of grade point average achievement, I would say are overwhelmingly women, the smartest people, the hardest workers, and they're not being represented because the system is set up to make sure that they don't.
Aidan, though, says, doesn't matter what the gender is, women are in charge in Northern Ireland, and look where they're at. Brianna, that point has been made by a number of people, that the First Minister and Deputy First Minister leading the Northern Executive, which has a much higher incidence of COVID-19 than us, are women.
Yeah, and there's also lots of countries run by men where there's higher incidence of COVID-19. I mean, just because Boris Johnson's a man running the country and having difficulty over in the UK, is that an argument not to have male members and male men running the government? Like, it's not really an argument. New Zealand is run by a female prime minister, and they're doing great guns.
Yeah,
but Brian, probably here's another listener comment today. And let me just put these comments out to both of you. I am in no way endorsing them by reading them. I'm just reading them from listeners. This one says, I'm sick of this female belly aching. I'm involved in a political party in rural Ireland. We have more male than female members, but every year we try to get more women into officer positions and especially try to get females to run for election, and none of them are willing to go for it. It's time for these women to put up or shut up. And how about that, Brianna, that particularly when it comes to politics, yeah. Women don't put themselves forward, and then often if they do put themselves forward, you actually find that women don't vote for women.
Okay, well, to address your first point, I would maybe ask that commenter, the man who texted in, about what's going on in that political party that women don't want to put their hands up. If women aren't putting their hands up to be involved, that maybe suggests that there's a problem with the way you're running things, that women don't feel comfortable putting their hand up and don't feel comfortable being involved. Are there structures, you know, preventing them from participating equally? Are meetings happening in unfriendly, friendly times? Are women being shouted out of meetings? Are, you know, is there misogynistic comments going on? There's a thousand invisible barriers that he might not be aware of that aren't just women uninterested. I'm sorry, but women have shown that they're interested in participating in public life. They've had to fight for that right to participate. They do want to participate, but you have to look at the barriers that might be invisible to you about why that's being prevented from happening.
And when he's finished doing that, Matt, he might just Google something like social media abuse for female politicians, and see the kinds of things which are said to women politicians on media, which are never ever said to men about all aspects of their personas. It's absolutely disgraceful. And that is at least one significant reason why women are dropping out of politics and not getting involved in the first place.
Thank you very much. Damien McLaughlin, Professor of Marketing at UCD Smurfit Business School, and Brianna Parkins, reporter for Ireland AM on Virgin Media Television.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.